You are now listening to Talking Transparency, the podcast where trans parents talk transparently. Hosted by Thea Ross, Melissa Lukson, and Cody Connor.
Hey everybody, welcome back. I'm Cody.
And I'm Thea. On today's episode, we are talking transparently with Amy Newsom LeBlanc. Say hi, Amy.
Hi. Hi.
Amy is our friend and a staff member at the 757 Creative Reuse Center, a nonprofit in downtown Norfolk, Virginia that we partner with closely on a lot of our workshops. They're dedicated to providing accessible and affordable secondhand arts and crafts and get pretty much all of their stuff directly out of landfills and out of different trash piles and puts it back to use for our community. They are a homeschooling mom and of four amazing kids, and including two kids who are members of the LGBTQI+ community. Cody, what do we got on our events this
Coming up on the calendar, on the 21st of April is our next trans family dinner, which we look forward to. The 25th of April is our Know Your Rights workshop, which will be at the 757 Creative Reuse Center.
I'll have to plan to be there. Yeah. Stay after work.
Also there is, on April 27th, is our monthly Kalos D&D club meeting, which I very much enjoy. We had a lot of fun last time.
It was. I feel like you slayed, what was it specifically did you slay?
We killed an owlbear.
Oh, okay.
I was very excited the day after because y'all left cookies.
Thank you, Carrie.
I could use cookies. All right. And then on May 19th is our May Trans Family Dinner. May 23rd is our t-shirt making workshop. And on the 25th is once again our D&D club.
Exactly. We've got things going on every month. So definitely go to kaloscoalition.com/events to check out what we've got going on the calendar. And thank you so much, Cody. And thank you for being here, Amy. I know like it was very last minute. You're coming directly from the hard work of nonprofit work to come talk to us today. So tell me, well, just to start off here, what is homeschooling culture like for a secular parent in the largely Christian-dominated homeschooling space? Because I know personally, I was homeschooled for several years, and it was very difficult finding those spaces.
Yeah. When we first started, when the kids were little, I got really lucky, and there was a really good – there is a very large secular homeschooling community in Hampton Roads. We actually have an LGBT – homeschoolers Facebook group for, you know, whether your kids or you are in fall under the umbrella.
That's great.
Yeah, there's like weekly meetups and all sorts of stuff, and like we also have like a Facebook group to like talk and discuss stuff. But when they were little, we had a co-op that was every week, and it was secular, so there were like variety of family. We had atheists, we had pagan, we had Muslim families, and we had the Mormon families, or like the Christians who just didn't fit in the box or couldn't sign somebody's... Christians other Christians didn't like, or people who just didn't feel like they could sign. Some of the homeschool Christian co-ops have like clauses you have to sign, like a morality clause kind of vibe, that like they expect you to not do these things even in your life outside of this meeting.
The Mormon church.
Yeah. Or like signing a statement of faith.
Yep.
And you know, which I understand why that exists. My husband was actually a pastor in our previous life for a year and a half. And that was when we actually got fired when I was pregnant with Ash, which we'll go into who he is later. But so there is a community that is open and accepting. And I made very sure early on that we found that, even though at that time I still classified myself as a Christian and we were still going to a semi-evangelical church. And then as I've like left that world, because I could never sign a statement of faith. I didn't believe, even when I was like, I always believed, like I always was in the LGBT. I am pansexual. Back then I said bi. So I knew like I wasn't like out publicly to people about it, but like I knew who I was. And so I was always like, I didn't want to be around those people, with my kids, because I didn't want that influence on my kids. I didn't want to have to explain that nastiness to them in that way. Because I could manage when they were really little what they got at church. So, you know, it was Bible stories. When they were really little, it wasn't a big deal. And now that they've gotten older, we've left and it's not an issue at all. But I didn't want them to grow up with that. So we were always like trying to make sure we were in groups with all different kinds of people. Because I've never wanted to be in a box.
Well, and there is kind of like this unnoticed toxicity in that environment. I think when you're in it, you don't really necessarily notice that that's what it is. It's when you're out.
Yeah.
When you're able to look at it from the outside. Because I had the experience with our oldest. Because we're not very religious. We're not religious at all. My wife may be a little bit Wiccan pagan, you know, but me, myself, just very undefined. I have my spirituality and my information, and I try and live my life based on love, and that's about as much I think into my religion. In our home, we're very accepting. We don't go around talking about how the way somebody else lives their life is bad for them or anything like that. Not because we don't even think about that.
Yeah.
It's not
of our business.
I don't spend like really any time at all thinking about what other people are doing to make themselves happy and how that's any of my business. I'm just very in my life. I'm focused on, hey, what are we going after? What's bringing us our joy? What's best for us right now? And, and I try and extend positivity that I create from there outwards. So my oldest met a friend and expressed interest to us in going to church. They were invited to church by their friend and came to us and said, hey, mom, dad, my friend invited me to go to church. And I have always been of the mind that I want you to be making a decision.
Yeah.
And in order for you to be making a decision, you need to have information about all of the possible decisions you can make. And so I told her, I said, Lena, look, this is where our beliefs stand, but your beliefs get to be yours, and you can build that from the information that you get in your life. That gets to be you. That's your own personal thing. And I'm not going to tell you what that is. So if you would like to go to your friend's church and experience that a little bit, then I'll let you do that.
And I think that's fantastic. I think that's the right way to be. You know, I haven't been a parent myself. I'm not in that position, but someday I would very much like to be a parent. And I know that that's the way it was for my father 50, 60 years ago down in North Carolina, where it's like, you got to be a certain age, you make your own decision. But then when we go back and look at it overall, and to get back to the origin of the question a little bit, it's about materialism. It's about the resources available to you as a parent or a community member. And I never begrudge anybody for going to a church and seeking resources. And I never begrudge anyone for going to a church, period, let's be honest. But also I never begrudge people who are seeking community, because that's what we're oftentimes talking about in a church. We're talking about the resources. And then also within the homeschooling community, because it wasn't so much homeschooling as it was correspondent school, maybe like 20 years ago almost at this point. And back then there were not the same level of resources. Obviously there were resources, but most of them were heavily, heavily religious. It wasn't something that, you know, my father was comfortable putting me in, or those sorts of things. So I remember that time period being in a lot more isolation. And I was very lucky because I got to, you know, go to high school as a freshman, and then I graduated as a senior and became like state debate champion that year and all that sort of good stuff. So like I had a very interesting journey through high school myself, but I did get a little bit of taste of both. I feel like I got some of the homeschooling, some of the correspondence schooling, some of the you know, actual lots of high school courses and such. And it's always struck me how difficult it is, because I've known other parents that become homeschool parents, because there really hasn't been those resources more become available online. But to hear that there's actually this sort of supportive spaces and that the groups have been able to grow, and that's encouraging for me. That's wonderful. Yeah.
There's a group of kids that meet every week. We aren't a part of that group anymore just because it didn't work for us anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, stuff happened, whatever. Life. But so that day doesn't work for us. But there's a group of kids that meet every week at the library and hang out, and they're from all over the area. So they've got, you know, like, it's cool to like see your kids have, like, it's not just like the kids in the neighborhood that they go to school with. Like, they've got kids from all over the area.
Well, I feel like it's a lot raising kids, but what are some of the joys you've experienced raising kids, and especially gender nonconforming kids, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm a mom at heart. Like, that's just like, I'm the mom friend in a group of friends. It's just kind of who I am. So, they were little, it was just so much fun to watch them, like, tiny little people growing, you know? And I spent a lot of time with them, because once they started school, they didn't just, you know, go to school. I was with them. And I was a stay-at-home mom until the pandemic. And they were then old enough for me to, like, go out. And now I have my job at the CRC, and I'm doing great stuff there.
So if you don't mind me asking, what grades are your children in now?
Okay. So Audrey, I'll go with ages because grades are fuzzy for us. Audrey is 19. Ash is 17. Cassie is 14. No, 15. And Darcy is 12. So I have one that just graduated last year, one that's about to graduate this year, and then middle school and a freshman.
Was it easier in high school, the homeschooling?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's been so easy. And, like, I have a very relaxed homeschool style, so it's been awesome.
Because we, with my daughter especially, we, you know, gone back and forth with whether or not we wanted to homeschool. We did the online school.
Yeah.
And then,
which is a great option if you can make it work.
Yes. And
it's the middle ground.
It was okay. I had a job where I was traveling at the time, and my wife was working. My dad lives with us, but, you know, he's a little bit older, and so it was hard.
Yeah.
And then went back to school, and then the pandemic hit.
Oh, gosh.
And we moved a couple times, and they were basically both of my children, my younger children, were in online school for like two full school years, two and a half full school years. And that was, I don't know. I was often working when the school was going on. Sometimes I could be home, but every experience with it seemed kind of bad. Like, we had one computer, but two kids in online school.
Oh, yeah. It was...
For part of it, we only had satellite internet going on.
Oh, gosh.
And so we couldn't even... It was real rough.
Yeah. One, it was so funny because I remember, like, my homeschool friends and I talking about that during the pandemic. It's like, these people have no clue. They think it's like 10 times more awful than it is, because obviously the school system was not prepared. It was an unprecedented, you know, experience, and they were not prepared for how to make that work. And it was kind of a wild west situation.
Kind of a shit show. Yes. That's what it was.
It was the wild, wild west. But we're like, we wouldn't want to do that.
Now,
because when you're doing the like, K-12 kind of like structured online school, it has a structure. They know what they're doing. It like has a flow. They've worked out the kinks in the system. But to go from school one day to you're on the computer and how many computers does your family have, and
how good is your internet signal, and how good are you at helping? And because the teacher's not there to go, hey, mm-hmm. like if my kid got up and decided they were going to go walk into the other room and do whatever the heck they wanted, teacher couldn't stop them in no, online and it's school. Not like,
yeah, it's like they got to go to the bathroom. They're not asking the teacher. They're at home.
You can't be like, stop or you're going to the principal's office. No, mom or dad or somebody there has to be like, hey, get back and pay attention to the screen.
Yeah.
And so, but in the homeschool community, that probably didn't affect you guys quite as much, huh?
No, ours was, we were lonely as hell, just like everybody else. Because, I mean,
you couldn't meet up as much.
Yeah, we couldn't, just like everybody else, we couldn't meet up in the same frequency. I mean, at least we had circles that were, like, used to, you know, doing things outside or whatever. So we did a lot of stuff outside. Like, we had a birthday party in somebody's front yard in September with, like, six families who were all kind of connected. And, like, had, you know, like, our little bubble that we made during the pandemic.
Yes, the bubbles. I can never forget. Everyone would, as time went on, the bubbles were like, oh, you're in my bubble, and the people that are in your bubble, let me keep it smaller. And then that was a whole thing.
It was. It was a whole thing. But so we had, like, our little pod bubble of people that we hung out with, and that was it, which was very different. I also think everybody got more into their online communities as well. Because my kids did, too. Like, they're all old enough to, like, use their phones. So they were, like, doing TikTok a lot. I was doing TikTok a lot. And, like, Discord and, like, developing those things. So they, like, they had, I think it was less traumatizing for them. Because they were used to be, you know, we would have periods where we couldn't do the outings as much. So they were a little more used to that. Than seeing kids every day, because they didn't have that, but...
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, affected different kids differently. You know, like my youngest, you know, he's a little bit more mainstream with how he presents with everything, you know. My middle child, my daughter, she's trans. She also has a kind of a physical disability that you notice. And so... In middle school, especially, that kind of stuff, that's rough. And so her not going to school, she's like, whatever, most of my friends are in my video games and my online stuff anyway. I'm not, that just means that this group of jerkheads won't pick on me or say anything stupid to me. I won't have to...
Yeah, the teacher's always paying attention. Yeah. They can't pick on me.
It literally would rather not be at school anyway works.
Yeah.
But for my youngest, my son, that's not how it is for him. He's feeling much more isolated.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was very, very different for them. Of course, it was such a time of extremes. I know. I felt like the 2020 for me... was just very extreme. I got to kind of have all of the extreme of COVID, I feel like. Mm-hmm. I started out in downtown Portland in 2020.
Wow.
Yeah, that's 2020. I started out in downtown Portland, Oregon, right in the Pearl District. And at about middle, end of March, everything's shutting down. My wife was working restaurants. That's shutting down. I took a job overseeing a camp that had been shut down because of COVID, just in the wilderness. Moved down to the camp with the family. We're living in the wilderness. Everything else is locked down, but we're just by ourselves in the middle of the California mountains wilderness. Just 100,000 acres of wilderness. We're hiking. We're fishing.
That sounds like heaven.
It's great. It's great till heaven lights on fire.
Oh, yep. That was 2022.
And for the first time of basically, because where we're living is basically the kind of area where I was born. So the first time in my entire life, that whole area lights on fire.
Be not afraid, Cody. Be not afraid.
Then we have to evacuate.
Oh, goodness.
Right? So we have to evacuate for over a month. And I decide we'll take a road trip out here to Virginia. This is how I ended up in Virginia. Because I got family and stuff out here. I got a grandmother and stuff out here. I thought we'll do a big family cross-country road trip. We'll spend this time hanging out with family instead of just sitting down hoping our house doesn't burn down. So we road trip out to Virginia. We spend time with family. My wife's like, I don't want to move back to the scorched earth of California. And I don't want to move back to the very expensive, still currently rioting in the streets of Portland. I would like for you to see if we can move to Virginia, which seems very nice and green like Oregon, but not expensive. And you have family here. And so I say, okay, that's what you want. I have no reasonable reason not to. It is scorched earth right now. Happy wife, happy life. I found a job out in Lynchburg area. We came back out real quick, packed up all of our stuff, and moved out to Lynchburg like November of 2020. I get there. The job I found was working for an assisted living and memory care facility. I'm a maintenance person.
You can find a job anywhere.
Anywhere, yes. Especially with my experience, because I've worked on just about every kind of building and building system as well. Big high rises, sprawling resorts. Managed to squeeze it all into my career so far. But 2 weeks after I take this job at this assisted living memory care facility, they give their first COVID outbreak. And all the other managers get COVID except for me. 2 weeks into the position, full-on COVID outbreak. All the other managers are out sick, required for 2 weeks out. A couple days in, they send a manager from another property to kind of help with paperwork stuff. And I'm running housekeeping also.
Oh, my.
It's November going into Christmas time. My grandmother, we're staying there because we're still looking for a place. So we're staying in her big trailer on her property, right? But now I'm surrounded by COVID, and she has breast cancer. My dad has COPD. He lives with us as well. Peak of 2020. So I spend that entire time, I'm isolated to the trailer. Everybody else is in the house. So all the entire Christmas season, I can't hug my kids. I can't kiss my wife. I made a little sign, I love you, and Christmas lights out on the lawn so they could look through the window.
You're like talking to your family through the door and your coat shivering.
And this entire time at work, people are dying.
Yeah.
They're not just right. They're not just sick.
Yeah.
They're dying. I came into the assisted living community and the population was 97. By the end of the outbreak, the population was 67, 66, 69, something like that. Now, not every single one of those people died of COVID within those 6 weeks, but pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping I don't bring it home to my family because this is a real scary time of COVID.
Yeah. I had no clue what was going on.
Yes. And so 2020 was an extreme year for me. Like everything bad that happened in 2020, I got to experience a piece of it. West Coast lit on fire. I was there. COVID outbreaks that just killed massive amounts of people at assisted living communities. I managed to be there somehow.
And in Lynchburg, too, of all places. Like, Lynchburg is not exactly a fun place to be normally.
No.
The shadow of Jerry Falwell.
Yes. My
God.
Oh, yes. Just driving by Liberty University every single day.
Ew.
Yep. Wow.
Well, I'm glad that it brought you here to Virginia, but I'm sorry that you had to endure that. And I guess also it probably gives you a different perspective on all these people at school boards complaining about masks and all this sort of stuff. And, you know,
I had an incident at the Home Depot during that time. Mm-hmm. You got to imagine that this particular time I'm not that it's, I guess, that much different than so many other times in my life, but I'm under a massive amount of stress at this particular juncture. Right. Sure. I've just had to move my family. Huge moves from Oregon to California, from California to Virginia, twice in a year. We've ran away from fires. There's COVID outbreaks across the country. And now I'm at work, brand new to this job.
COVID, and you're running the whole thing.
Yeah, COVID's all around me. I'm like in rooms with COVID positive people, completely like plastic wrapped, cleaning up feces and everything, and handing out meals and just everything.
Yeah.
But I'm a maintenance supervisor. And so while all this is going on, I have to go to the Home Depot to get some things to fix, like the light bulbs and
sure,
et cetera.
Of course.
And more cleaning supplies, so many cleaning supplies and so many trash cans so that everything could be separated and you could pull off all of your stuff when you leave one room to put new stuff on when you go into another room. Just so many things. So I'm at Home Depot. And I'm walking around and I'm just watching these people walk around without masks on. And I get it, to them, they're not experiencing this. I mean, some of them probably think COVID's fake. To me, somebody I knew died today from it. And I walk into the manager because I know the policy is you have to have the mask on to be on in the store. And I tell him, I'm like, hey, why are you just so okay with all of the people walking around with masks? And he's like, oh, it's really their decision. There's nothing I can do about it. I was like, okay. Okay, I get that. I have spent my entire day in close proximity to people that are absolutely positive with COVID all day long. They're dying of it right now. All day long, all day yesterday, everywhere it's been around me. Would you like for me to make the decision to take my mask off right here in front of you and continue this conversation? And I never seen somebody's eyes get so big in my life.
It's just, you know, it's unbelievable to me that a lot of the fervor that we see with this outrage at critical race theory and trans, a lot of these issues, I feel like, is capitalized on the organization that's come out of this anti-mask stuff. I feel like the Moms for Liberty and so they wrote a wave of outrage. At least that's my recollection.
Well, it is a wave of fear and outrage, right? Because it's not really about masks, and it's not really about kind of a right to a specific freedom, right? Because here's the idea: the concept of having to do certain things in order to participate in certain parts of public and society has always existed.
Yeah.
That's why you have to have your vaccine charts for your kids when you're sending them to school. And that's why all of that exists now, is because that has existed for a long period of time. And so making certain things mandatory for the betterment and protection of society is not a new concept.
We just haven't had to do it for a while.
We just haven't had to do it for a while. We just haven't had to make a new change in it for a while. And so they used this already terrified group of people and played on their emotions to just...
I'm sorry. I'm stuck on vaccine shirts. I've been trying so hard.
Okay,
not to laugh.
Okay. I apologize. Guys, I need to let it out very badly. Can we pause?
We can totally pause.
Absolutely. I gotta go pee.
Let us take a really quick break.
Yeah,
we're gonna take that because I know that's gonna get edited.
We're gonna take a 5 at vaccine shots. Okay. All right. So, for everybody that missed it, because Thea did not miss it, we were talking about how conservatives had ridden the fear.
Vaccine shots. We were talking about vaccine shots.
Yeah, actually, Ty will go ahead and loop this for you now, where I say quite loudly, apparently, vaccine sharts.
Yes, please. Get the live EDM mix remix version live. Come on. Internet, vaccine do sharts. Your thing. Vaccine sharts. Continue.
Well, we were talking about how, you know, they rode that fear and attached something very small to it, like masks, and then attached that to freedom in the midst of mass hysteria. And that's how they turned to these school boards, was on that wave of fear.
Yeah.
And then in order to keep their position of power, they just refocused that fear on something else. And as is often is the case, as we hear a lot, the children, the children, the children.
Mm-hmm.
And being that everybody's still in that place of fear, they're not having logical, progressive thoughts based on information. They're just afraid, and somebody's saying that they're hurting the children. They just have continued to ride that.
They can't see the logic.
No,
at that point, there's logic.
And that's what they say. They never say it's about logic. They always say, what is it about their beliefs? And one of the things that I think is, we talk a lot about beliefs and we talk about values versus beliefs, but what are the most important values you want to pass on to your kids? And do you feel it's important to pass on? Because we can talk about what we shouldn't do, and we talk about all this negativity and that comes out there. But to me, leading with joy and that positivity is what we should be doing. So what is, do you think, a value versus belief? We've discussed this a few times, but Amy.
Oh, yeah, values versus beliefs.
Yes.
For me, the biggest thing is that I want my kids to know that they are just as much as I am still as a 40-year-old human being, learning about myself and discovering new things about myself and understanding myself in new ways. Like, I'm here for you as that safe space to, like, bring that stuff to me. And it's so funny. When my son came out as trans, it was originally non-binary, and then he was trans, and now he's like, I'm somewhere in this umbrella. I think he's using trans mask non-binary. He still dresses very feminine to a lot of people, but he's on hormones. He's on T. He's been on T for almost a year. It'll be a year in June.
I think we don't break out of that gender norm just to be put back in the box, for crying out loud. Like, just because I'm a trans girl, I was like, I can't wear slacks. I can't wear jeans. Like, no, I'm sorry.
It's like, you can do whatever I'm allowed to do. I'm a human being. I can dress however I want.
Trans men can be femme if they want.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, you get to be you. You get to dress however you want. And, like, that's my big thing is, like, instilling in them that it's okay to be who you are. I put myself in a lot of boxes throughout my life. Just for different stuff, like in the sphere of Christianity that I put myself in, I was in a very conservative sphere, but I was never, oh my goodness, I was never a very conservative person. I was always an ally, or appeared as an ally. Like, conversations would happen in church spaces and I would be angry about things, and people knew that I did not agree with them, and it always made things very uncomfortable. But I was like, I'm not gonna let you speak poorly of people, because if you say, and it's gotten worse, like on that conversation we were having before, it's gotten worse. I started figuring out that people were not valuing the same things. Because what I saw when I, like, dug into Christianity was Jesus and the ideas that I saw of Jesus in, like, the Sermon on the Mount. And that was a very specific thing. And that's loving everyone, caring for everyone. And that wasn't what I was seeing. And I was like, I can't be a part of this anymore. Because it didn't honor the values that I found important in that, what brought me to that space to begin with. Because to me, that's not what it was about. Like, it's not about power. That's the opposite, the antithesis of what that text said to me. And, like, that's a value that I've, like, belief system and value that I've tried to bring to my kids. Whatever it is that you find in the world of spirituality or not, whether you believe nothing, or your beliefs fall to the logical scientific principles that can be, like, what we can prove about the world, like, cool, like, whatever it is, that's where I want them to be. But I want them to know that they can have that space. And that, I don't know where that thought was going.
Well, I think, you know, love a lot of times exists in opposition to these forces, these negative forces. Yeah. And when you're seeing a group of people, whether it be a church, whether it be a school board, whether it be a bunch of schoolyard bullies straying from that, and when they're going closer and closer to this exclusion, it's, I think they are straying away from those messages of Jesus. I think Jesus would be totally cool with almost all the trans people that I know. I know he'd want to hang out with them. He would love us.
Yeah.
Like that's the whole
thing. He would be all about it. Well, I mean, he was hanging out with tax collectors and most likely sex workers. Well, yeah. So what are we?
Well, like, at the end of the day, and I think that's something we got to understand about the conversation, is the end of the day, especially when we're talking about, you know, Christianity and ultra conservatives and that particular interpretation, right, of Christianity, it's because there's really, we're really not talking about necessarily a difference of values. Because it's not about values, right? I've had a lot of conversations with conservatives, very conservatives. I've had a lot of religious people and pastors tell me, oh, I wish the members of my church lived their lives the way you live theirs. All right? The thing is, the only real sin is to not believe in the religion. Because here's the thing, I could be the best person in the world. I can live my life perfectly according to their belief system even. But I will go to hell because I don't believe in God. They, however, can be the very worst people. But well, they will go to heaven and be forgiven because they believe in God.
This is where you get me with my I was a pastor's wife. This is where I want to bring out the... And Jesus said to them, who are you? I never knew you. Get out of here. You said you believed in me, but I don't know who the hell you are.
Well, faith without works is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that these are different ideas in the church. And when I went, we had Miss Victoria on. We went and we talk a lot about a local church, an evangelical church. I just wanted to put them under evangelical umbrella, but they're a non-denominational church, the Grace Bible Church. And okay. I went in there and I talked to one of their pastors and, you know, very, very lovely man, trying to open his heart, trying to be there, trying to listen. And I think to myself, you know, goodness, I talk about losing trains of thoughts. just about how he was, one of the questions I asked him was, you know, about me and my afterlife, like as a trans person, would God put me back in like the wrong body or something? Or would I just be denied entry to heaven? And he's like, no, you have a space in heaven, all these sorts of things. And I was talking about this. And I was like, well, what about the Nazis? And then I was like, because like it really just comes to what you're talking about. It's like, are we going to have similar values or not? And if your values is one of infinite redemption, how can you look at me and say that you're not going to try to love me or find some space to love me or understanding? And that comes back down to what you said. It's faith is dead without good works, but faith is also dead if it's built on a crumbling foundation. And that foundation is one of not love, but instead of persecution, control, power. That's exactly what we're talking about. Yes.
Which is where all that comes back to. And I see the progression that the pandemic in particular brought back up of, like, you know, back to the 70s and 80s and Falwell and the moral majority and all that stuff. Like, it all loops back to, like, they were using that fear to gain power.
Oh, and it's become more and more religious. I mean, happened just yesterday, but Trump literally became a Bible salesman?
I know. I saw that. I could not open an article.
He literally became a Bible salesman.
¿Por qué?
He's now selling these $60... God bless America Bibles. It's the King James Version Bible with the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and
that's
the Pledge
clearly
of
blasphemy, right?
The...
That's like clearly like you're trying to like it's very
This is like Jesus flipping tables shit right here.
Okay, but this totally justifies our after episode idea.
Make America pray again is the new Trump slogan.
That man has.
I don't want to think about that. This hurts my brain, my face.
Yeah.
What?
When fascism comes to America, it'll come wrapped in an American flag.
and a cross with it. It's an American flag wrapped around the cross.
Oh my gosh. It's unbelievable that it's just so on the nose.
And the fact that all this happened during Holy Week.
On the nose that he is now literally a Bible salesman. That's who.
I'm still laughing that he announced this during Holy Week. And I think it was like, what was it, yesterday? So it was like, it was just very funny. I think it was Father Nathan Monk I saw talking about that and like the particular day that he chose and what it means in Holy Week. And it was just really
fascinating. A lot of Bibles. But yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the difference between beliefs and values. I don't know, but hitting on what you were talking about earlier, I mean, I think I agree with you. If I was passing, what I want my kids to take from me, because I don't expect my kids to be like me. If anything, I want them to be better than me. I tell that every time my daughter goes, "Oh, but you made these mistakes," and I was like, "Yeah, I'm not trying to make you like me. I'm trying to help you be better than me."
I'm trying to help you. But learn from my history.
What I think is the most important thing, I mean, just for people to have with them, but I want my children to take on from me, is make your decisions with love and honesty and follow through on them with determination. If you do those things, you'll end up the best you can be in life. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, do what brings you joy. Go after what you love. Yeah. That's my only expectation.
That's so sweet. And honestly, what more could a parent really want? I mean, I guess some parents, they want their kids to grow up and be very specific things. They get caught in that. Yeah,
they have a vision.
Well, we attach our own traumas and our own shames and things that we envisioned as successful. And the pressures that we got, I mean, for me growing up religiously, I was going to be a bishop and a pastor and all of these things. And that's part of why even getting older, it was so hard for me to begin on taking on things like leadership roles or allowing some of my light to shine in certain places and talents and stuff like that, was this idea that attention brings expectation, mm-hmm. which precedes disappointment, right?
Yeah.
Because you can, once that expectation's created, you can't be you without disappointing them. That's why I don't create those expectations for my children.
Yeah.
I want them to be able to be them without feeling like they're disappointing me.
Are we like connected in the brain? Because this is exactly how I would talk. You're just saying it better than me.
Well, I feel like this is what happens when parents stop and reconcile with their own pain and trauma.
Oh, yeah.
When they continue to explore who they are and then allow that space for themselves, but also for their kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I sometimes we talk about this. We talk about how there is pain for those people in those pews who are denying themselves and how that pain is bore upon the community, bore upon their families and their children. And how that, when we talk about generational curses,
and we talk about these sorts of pain. Shame. Because it's a culture largely, not intentionally, I don't think, in the beginning, but it just became a culture of shame. When you look at purity culture, the goal there has some nobleness to it, right? Like, it's not necessarily...
Well, the goal's always noble.
Yeah. But what happens in the process is that it gets corrupted by people.
Yeah.
Well, and how's we this, just
the saying
throw
go, the road
shame
to hell is paved with good intentions.
Like... Like, there is some, like, I don't know, like, it's just, we, and it's a human thing. I don't think any of us are immune to it. It just comes out better in some way, like, in some places and worse than others.
Well, and we want to sometimes ignore the consequences of certain things in order to embrace the benefits of it or still receive the benefits of it. I mean, that's very much... You know, I was listening to something today, such an interesting concept. You know, you have the liberals and the conservatives, right? And the conservatives hate the liberals because the liberals inflame tensions, right? That's the argument. right? The liberals inflame tensions. The tensions wouldn't be there if the liberals didn't inflame them. And even the good liberals just ignore that the tensions are being inflamed. And then you switch that to the conservative side. You have the conservatives that absolutely are racists and etc. And they create tensions, the tensions that the liberals inflame, right? Then you have the good conservatives that ignore that the other conservatives are racists and bigots and create the tensions. And so...
good conservatives.
Yes, yeah. Just like the on their side, there would be the good liberals, the good ones, mm-hmm. in those creations of the sides. But
the sides are never that simple
either. The sides are never that simple, and there's so much money attached to them.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of money attached in these churches. And there's a lot of money attached, and there's a lot of goodness in churches, a lot of goodness and good people and good organizations.
And I think that's one of the things. I think a lot of people still connect to church because it's a third space, which is like what my work is becoming, is a third space, a place where people can come that you're not necessarily expected to spend a lot of money. You know, I think people...
It creates activities. It creates...
Yeah, it's things to do. We don't have a lot of those third spaces anymore, but church has always been one. It's a place of community, of gathering. Things are happening. Yeah. We're sharing meals, which is a huge thing.
People are very much detaching in a lot of ways, though, from the concept of doing that at church.
Yes.
And that's why you're hungry
for third spaces.
Yeah,
that's why we're creating the trans family dinners. That's why we're hosting workshops. That's why y'all host so many classes at the CRC. That's why those third spaces are important. What the work that y'all are doing, the fact that you have gave us that space, that you've helped create that space for the queer community, for other communities, it's so important.
Yeah. And I don't think when we started, I don't think that third space concept was really there. But when we got that new space and we had the space for it and we could really create it, it's been fun.
Creatively reusing even the space, which is holistically your mission.
Yes. I love it. It's just so crazy.
It's fun. It's so cool. But I feel like we should probably move on a little bit to our new segments and get into some of the other things. Some of this is related to what we've been talking about tonight, actually. One of the things I wanted to share is there was an article that came out about the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors. They voted 9-0, and this is the Northern Virginia Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, to proclaim their support for TDEV, which falls on Easter this year. And a lot of conservatives have been using this to leverage outrage and hate. Fox News had actually reported that... the chapter leader of the Independent Women's Network, who calls themselves a private online forum empowering conservative women to inspire, influence, and impact their communities, called the decision reprehensible and part of a plot to hijack Easter. She went on to write in the Washington Examiner that this turns the holiest of days into a celebration of an ideology that undermines the church's core convictions, and that members of the Fairfax board also used their illogical decision to hijack Easter as an opportunity to celebrate their ideological homogeneity. Genitity? Yeah, there we go. I got that one correct. Aurora is not a person of the cloth, and in contrast to her statements, the United Church of Christ offered the following statement as part of a larger missive on the resurrection movement that trans and gender non-conforming people deserve. They said, "The resurrection story holds for LGBTQ+ people of faith the ultimate promise and truth. God is constantly coming out for your love and your personhood, and God knows intimately the ways it aches when those around us deny us of our rights to be human in a relationship to each other. Resurrection this Easter Sunday can look like uplifting, not just the disparities trans and non-binary siblings are facing, but are offering spaces for their gifts from God to be celebrated. Many celebrations are being held in collaboration with church groups, including our own TDEV here in Hampton Roads. In Canada, a Calgary Unitarian Church will be merging a drag show with their Easter Sunday service as part of a sacred act of protest. TransUSA National Pageantry and the National Center for Transgender Equality will also hold a series of events in D.C. on Sunday in commemoration of the International Trans Day of Visibility, supported by the Unitarian Church. And just to speak a little bit more about the churches that we're working with, we know that we have got support from the MCC New Life Church. Mm-hmm. We've got the Great Awakening that's coming out. And again, I don't know if this episode will be live. Hopefully by the time this is done, the event will be over and everyone will have great times. But I do think it's important, because I never want people to listen to our podcast and ever be able to say or take excerpts, "Oh, these people are very anti-theist," or we want to go into these churches. We've been in these churches. The people, we are families. Mm-hmm. We're in communities. And I think your voice is so important because having been in these spaces.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sorry to see that a lot of folks aren't having those third space. The libraries get shut down.
Yeah. There's
and then not. These churches are becoming more hostile in some ways.
Yeah.
And
it just makes it that much harder.
Yeah, well, and things I always...
But they know they're wrong. Sorry,
continue. I won't lie. I always get a little bit irked when I hear them talk about hijacking an Easter-like holiday or like a holiday like Easter. Because it wasn't their holiday to start out with.
You hijacked somebody else's holiday.
Easter and even most of the things attached to Christmas and these other Christian holidays were appropriated absolutely from other religions, including the dates, very much in an attempt, a successful attempt, to colonize the people of that religion with Christianity.
Yep.
And so while I would never say you shouldn't celebrate this for your reasons, absolutely celebrate. Honestly, given its history, it should be much more inclusionary and even a celebration of different religions coming together on that day, considering that that's really where a lot of its origins lie.
Well, and the fact that, like, everybody, like, all the big holidays, everybody's got a holiday around then. You know what I mean? Like, okay, Christmas. Well, it's also this equinox. It's also, or the, not the equinox, the,
The solstice.
The solstice. Yeah, yeah, it's the solstice. Well, like, all of these things, like, happen at the same time of year.
And that's,
so and there's a reason
that's why that Christian it made that way. Those days their holidays. Jesus wasn't born on December 25th.
No.
But that's a solstice day, and solstice were usually used as holidays across many different cultures, across many countries. And so...
Because they recognized what the earth was doing.
Yes, and so making your holiday that day allowed you to then appropriate everybody else's holiday when you moved in to their culture and country.
It's a very colonizing type mindset. It's, and, you know, the other thing about the inclusivity of Easter is Jesus, you know, at least historically, canonically, is assumed to be a male, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And the Easter bunny is supposed to be Jesus, right? I mean, because I don't really understand. And
it's, I've never understood how the bunny the and Easter Jesus bunny came is together. This
random bunny pooping eggs, apparently.
No, I don't know.
Is that a candy company creation?
That is not how I remember it being told. I remember being told specifically that the Easter Bunny was Jesus, and that, you know, like, and then also I remember being on TikTok like a month ago and reading something about how the Easter Bunny is actually Jesus's fursona. And then okay, also,
I really like that.
If Jesus is a man and that's his fursona, and he's laying eggs, being a girl bunny, like, it's a trans inclusive, very furry inclusive. I mean, and honestly,
that's some queer stuff right there. That's some queer shit.
And give me a better explanation, Christian. Do those eggs, why we have a giant bunny laying eggs. Wait,
so let me,
where did the bunny come from?
Let me really. So do those eggs now count as Jesus's aborted fetuses that honestly, we will then paint up and
in
drag?
In certain states, absolutely. you can't even have eggs anymore.
Oh my God.
Don't tell Cadbury.
I can't wait for the Easter egg hunt this year.
Oh, goodness gracious. I mean, I just always talk about zombie Jesus.
Tell me a bit more about zombie Jesus.
Resurrection.
Yeah,
he's a freaking zombie.
Jesus is a zombie.
Yeah, he's just a zombie now.
Who died, came back to life.
He's a zombie.
Wow.
I've also heard...
I've never made that connection.
There's I don't know. There's like some other like creature that's like zombie-like, like undead thing. I can't remember. Where's my husband when I need him?
Vampire?
So Easter is about an undead bunny that's laying eggs. This is crazy.
Easter is
crazy.
I didn't. I never.
Easter
knew
is about an undead bunny that lays eggs. We then take
who
those,
died for your sins.
Who died for your sins? We then take those aborted fetuses.
And
we paint them up in drag. And we hide them for our children to find.
And it's secretly actually zombie Jesus who is expressing their gender identity also at the same time.
And fursona.
And their fursona.
And their furry nature. Oh my gosh, we've gotten all of, we've hit all of the talking points.
It's legitimate. Duh.
These kids, they think they're cats. I think that's my... I'm like,
they're now they're trans and Jesus. What's wrong with these people? Although legitimately there was an entire debate throughout history about, you know, the gender and sexuality of Jesus and this whole thing about, you know, the the gash in Jesus' side, all these sorts of things being a metaphor. It's a huge controversy, but again, well, I hope that anyone listening to this is inspired to do some more research about the history of Christianity and Easter, because that is what we're trying to do. We're trying to provide education and also have fun conversations. So despite all the levity here, I do, you know, it is Easter, or was Easter by the time folks are listening. I hope that everyone had fun with their families, and I hope that everyone comes out to the Trans Day of Visibility this weekend and we have good times. And
the kids and I will be there in the morning before I have to go to work at 2.
That's amazing.
I'm not sure who's coming. I'm just going to be like, hey, who wants to come?
Okay, we're going to have hot dogs and hamburgers. Everything's going to be fantastic. Let's see. We have another news story too, don't we, Cody?
Well, I mean, there's always much, much more in the news. Let me get my face to unlock my phone real quick here.
Normally, we have Melissa doing the news, and I feel like
she is so much better at the news.
She is. She is very good at the news. Also, I miss her this evening. She could not be here tonight, in case we did not say that at the beginning. Melissa, we always love you.
I'm sad I didn't get to meet you.
That's why we have episode 2, babe.
I know. We're doing episode 2.
Actually, in California.
Ooh.
Which hurts a little bit, right? But only goes to show that it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I get that on my TikTok. Sometimes you should just move to a better place. There's not a lot of better places. I lived
just north of Sacramento in Lincoln. You know Lincoln?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have...
There are Republican
officers. Three initiatives, which conservatives are collectively referring to as the Protect Kids Act.
Oh no! So it does the exact opposite.
That's exactly right. And it's the big three that they know they've been able to toe hold. No gender affirming care for minors. No transgender girls, right? Because they're not worried about men in sports. No transgender girls playing girls' sports, and using the restrooms. So the big three.
Public restrooms, or is this to do with just schools?
The girls' restrooms and locker rooms. So okay, it's schools. Oh, and of course the forced outing. Notifying parents. And it's interesting because, so they're trying to get the ballots and the signatures. But one thing I noticed about it, Students First California Committee.
Were they wearing stormtrooper outfits?
Well, where else have we heard Students First? Right here in Virginia Beach.
Oh, this is true.
Who sponsors all of the conservative members of our school board that have pushed the forced outing policies, that have pushed the transgender policies and the book bans and all of that, is a Students First group. And so you're seeing this active push that is happening in other states, now even making its way into places like California, trying to push these same hateful discriminatory laws in their schools.
Well, there's a couple upsides to this, to the darkness, always. Mm-hmm. If you look, there's light to be found. If they are able to push something like this in California, the appellate courts, the federal district courts out there are much more amenable and hopefully will be able to give rulings and things that will help overturn these things quickly, as we've seen in several states. And then also it sets us up potentially for test case, depending on the nature that could potentially rule in our favor. I don't know if we could get that with the SCOTUS, but again, it's a matter about finding the right cases and being able to defend the right circumstances. It's still a horror that we have to go through this to be able to eat, like, this darkness at all.
See some of the same fighting back, and that's part of it with some of these things. You're right, because like what you've seen happen in Texas and some of those states, well, they'll pass a law create a law that they know is illegal. They know is going to get challenged. Because the point of that is to then take it through a favorable judge in Texas and a favorable area and use that to get it passed up to the Supreme Court and set that legal precedent on the way up. But in California, they'll hopefully use some of that same tactic and do the same thing. But then you don't necessarily want stuff going to this Supreme Court.
Well, that's the whole thing. They don't, like, even when it comes to the way that they're playing this, they know they can't overplay their hand. They can't have Amy Coney Barrett, member of the ADF, come in and rule on this sort of stuff and do 5-4 decisions. So a lot of times getting these appellate or federal judges to make these rulings gives the Supreme Court the ability to abuse their shadow docket, mm-hmm. the ability for them to not take cases or for them to make certain rulings on certain injunctions and certain things that need to be done without actually having a full court case. So these are the sorts of things that they're able to very rapidly set new precedences with just by having these things tossed up or having these things muling down at the appellate levels or at the state Supreme Court levels because they can jump in. So I think that the way that we see this interconnection between Texas and California, Tennessee, Virginia, Florida, all these different states, and the way that these Moms for Liberty and these Students First groups, the way that if you really track it down, a lot of the money comes from the same places.
It does.
They talk and communicate with each other. They go not just around to these groups and these school boards, they go to the state legislatures, they go to the federal, and they hold these spaces and lobby.
It is an organized group. It's not, one group spreading the same seed.
To the point of even moving people from some of these states to other states to occupy political positions.
David Culpepper. Excuse me. I think I may have choked on some pepper.
Yeah. And so, I mean, yeah, it's very organized and very intentional. And you're seeing, it's part of why you're seeing the bills increase right now, is they're definitely have the intention of using a favorable Supreme Court to create a controlling minority. Because it really is, and and the goal, and it's funny because you're also starting to watch this verbiage change if they're starting to have some success, right? Because just a year ago, this was the culture wars, right? It's not about different religions, it's not about different beliefs, it's the culture wars, right? We're different cultures, we're just different, right? Yesterday, the current Republican candidate for president and once President Donald Trump became a literal Bible salesman. Literal Bible salesman. The line of culture war into religious war could not have been crossed more definitively than really the leader of their entire section of people declaring that I sell Bibles and we need to make America pray again.
And see, that's the real crux of it. Make America pray. You see, we can talk about religion. We can have these conversations, good faith. But it all goes away when we talk about using state power or any authority or power, if you're your boss or whatever, to make you adhere to that person's faith. And it's weaponized so one-sidedly.
Yeah, but if I want to pray to Zeus or Bridget.
All hail Bridget.
Well, and it creates a continuous...
I'll pray. I'm just not going to pray to who you want me to pray to. What are you going to do?
It creates a continuous effect of distillation, right? Because how many different Christian sects are there?
You can't get two Christians to agree about anything.
Yeah. First Baptist
You can't get two okay.
Or Southern Baptist.
I was Baptist for a while. You can't get two Southern Baptists to agree about anything.
And so that's where it goes from there. Because it's not something that's satisfied. You can't satisfy that kind of hate and cycle. It just devours until there's nothing left to devour.
I think I think we've pretty much diagnosed the problem, y'all. It's hatred. It's devouring hatred.
You know, I'm gonna be real cliche right now.
Go for it.
I'm gonna quote Martin Luther King Jr. very poorly. This is not a quote.
Paraphrase.
Darkness can't overcome darkness. Only light can do that.
That's very true. And honestly, the poignancy of the statement is added by you with the silly goose currently. That's love. That's love right there. You saw it right.
I mean, okay. So anybody who knows me and communicates with me very much, if I say it's locked on my phone, I can't even not do it on my phone. If I type the word love, the capital L is, it's a capital L always, because that it is that. It is not just a passive thing. It is a capitalized word in my lexicon. Like, it is more than just a simple, like, I love you. No, it's an action, it's a verb, it's a noun, it's all the things.
And the semiotic significance of capitalizing or not capitalizing something is really important. I think a lot of people misunderstand that, but I mean, you can look at the works of bell hooks. You can look at all sorts of different things throughout history that talk about this. And it is important, I think, to understand and differentiate the concept and these larger things that permeate object and noun and adjective and relationships to each other, to these deeper concepts. So, like, love, capital L, love. I love that.
I love
capital
that.
L.
Capital L, love.
I love that. I think that's
also my religion.
I think that's
at this point.
Yes, love.
Love is my religion. Okay, I apologize. I will not sing again on the podcast.
You just got to sing louder. We got to harmonize together.
Next time.
I think that's a perfect place for us to end tonight with love, the capital L. And if the problem's hate, that's how we beat it. Yeah. Love. And as we say every show, trans joy will beat hate every time.
That's true.
Thanks for joining us.
Amen. That totally, trans joy. Excellent. Will always call, like, your tagline needs an amen after.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Collective Tattoo and the Kalos Coalition. We are listener supported, so if you like the show, please consider donating to us on Patreon at patreon.com/talkingtransparency. Like, share, and subscribe across social media, and be sure to visit our Linktree at linktree.com/talkingtrans.